Well, today is February 3rd, and it's the beginning of our month-long intensive focusing on the teachings of Dogen Zenji, who was the Japanese monk who went to China and came back to Japan and brought this particular stream of Zen, a way of practicing Zen, to Japan. And thus eventually to us. For many years, we've had a Dogen, what we call a Dogen study retreat, weekend retreat at around this time, or towards the end of February, where we choose a particular Dogen text to read and discuss. And one year, we led up to that with a four-week Wednesday evening Dharma seminar called Dogen Essentials. But this is the first time that we've decided to include both Wednesdays and Sundays leading up to the weekend at the end. So you may wonder why. First, when we do the weekends, it often feels like we're kind of just getting warmed up and then it's over. That we don't quite have time to do justice to the text. Second, we thought it might be a good way to focus a month-long intensive that some people would spend at Brightstream Temple at our residence. But due to various circumstances, that was not to be, and we weren't able to organize that maybe next year. Michael and I have typically taken turns leading the Dogen weekend, and this year being my turn, I perhaps foolishly thought, well, we've never done the fascicle or the text called Continuous Practice. It's a really long one. So I thought, well, we'll need more time. So we're getting an early start on it. But then after reading it more carefully, I realized that our usual approach of doing a close reading of the text isn't necessarily going to work that well for this one. So there are some passages that we'll read closely. But we'll take a different approach and we'll go beyond the text and into our everyday lives and and practice and look also at contemporary perspectives. And we'll call upon others. Claire will do a talk and Flo, our other two mountain range teachers, and Michael will help out. And we'll open it up beyond this particular text, which is called Continuous Practice, which is pretty much widely inclusive. Anyway, so we'll look at it through different lenses. And we'll see what happens. And there's not homework. You can read, I haven't done it yet. I'm going to post a link to the online, an online where the whole two-volume Dogen's masterwork called Shobo Genzo, Treasury of the True Dharma Eye, is online, so you can I'll put a link to that on the event posting for the Dogen intensive. I'll put it in more than one place. So if you want to find the text, you can, but there's no homework. You don't have to. It's your actual life and practice where you will take this beyond the Zendo. So for those who are new, who don't know who this Dogen fellow is, I want to say a little bit about his life and times. He was born in Kyoto, which was not called Kyoto then, it was called Heian-kyo, in the year 1200. That's a really long time ago. Over 800 years. Into a high-ranking family in the nobility. It's believed that his father died when he was only 2 years old and his mother when he was eight. And the second loss affected him deeply. He's said to have received his first insight into the impermanence of all things as he watched the incense smoke rise where it was next to his mother's body. a number. I mean, the Buddha himself, you know, lost his mother when he was an infant. A number of Dharma figures had early losses, and a number of other, you know, great human beings had early losses that in some way led to a life of inquiry, of searching for answers. Dogen's uncle offered him a place kind of on track for a position in court. But he chose instead to become a Buddhist monk. And I think he was only 12 or 14. He was ordained in the Tendai school, which was the dominant school of Buddhism at the time. And he trained at a mountain monastery called Enryaku-ji. Some of you have been there, perhaps, in the northeast of Kyoto. And there he learned the teaching of original enlightenment, that we all have Buddha nature, and that enlightenment is not something out there in the distant future we must strive to achieve, but rather that our essential nature is awakened. We just have to remove the obstacles to that nature. So in response to this teaching as a teenager, Dogen formed a question that was really to become central to his life and practice, which his question was, if we are already enlightened Buddhas, why do we have to practice so hard to become enlightened, right? So his writings are his answer to this early question. And he felt that the practice there, meditation was only a small part of practice in those times. He felt that the practice, there were a lot of rituals, esoteric Buddhist rituals, there was chanting, it was a mixed practice. But he felt it was not helping him to answer that question. So when he was 17, he made his way to the very first Zen temple in Japan, Kenninji, which was founded in 1202 by Eisai, who was the first Japanese priest to bring Zen to Japan. But it was what's called a Rinzai school. So Dogen practiced there with Eisai's disciple, Myozen. And then in 1223, so he would only have been 23 at the time, he went with his teacher to China to go to the source. And then his teacher died there. And Dogen wandered from place to place, practicing with several teachers before he met Tiantong Rujing, who he felt was his true teacher, and who taught him a different perspective on practice from what we now call the Soto, or in China, the Caodong school. And this is what he brought back to Japan. At first, he just went back to Kenninji, the Rinzai temple, but the style of practice there no longer fit him, so he moved to a little hermitage out on the mountainside in the outskirts of Kyoto, where he wrote his first teaching text, Kukan Zazengi, which we are going to chant in a little bit, which gives instructions for Zazen and includes the famous lines, "Think of not thinking." How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. So there's a question for you. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking, which does not mean a blank, empty mind. It means thoughts arise and pass. We don't engage them and spin them into endless dramas and narratives. That we don't grab onto our thoughts and we don't push them away. So people gradually began to come to Dogen's little hermitage and hear his teaching. So in 1233, so he was only 33, he founded his own monastery, Koshoji. And he lived there and taught there for the next 10 years and wrote many of his most famous writings. Then he moved the whole monastery to a remote mountainous area on the other side of Japan, near the Japan Sea. The new monastery was called Daibutsuji, which means Great Buddha Temple. And later it was called, the name was changed to Eiheiji, Great Eternal Peace Temple. And that temple still exists, monastery still exists. Some of us have been there. And it's still one of the two main training temples in Soto Zen today. So sometimes you hear Dogen called Eihei Dogen, because that was the way to use the temple name and then the Dharma name. Or sometimes you'll hear him called Dogen Zenji. Zenji just means Zen teacher. So if you hear, if I say that, that's what I'm saying. So he taught there at Eiheiji until his death at the age of 56. And in the year before his death, he compiled all of these writings into the Shobo Genzo, Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. And they're different editions, but the one most used has 96 chapters, which are called fascicles. So if I slip and say that word fascicle, you'll know what I mean. Is they're sections of a book that were written separately. They weren't written as chapters. They were written separately and then later compiled. That's what fascicles are. So one important thing to realize about Dogen's times is that he lived in a time of great change and instability in Japan. There had been 400 years of relative peace and stability under the emperor, supported by a very powerful family clan, the Fujiwara family. And then that began to break down, and civil war broke out between rival clans. So in addition to the chaos of war, there was also a series of disasters, typhoons, tsunamis, earthquakes, and fires, and also two Mongol invasions from Korea. They were naval invasions that were repelled. And all this created an atmosphere of great fear and uncertainty. Does this sound familiar? Not so different from our times. Although our times, it's on a much greater scale, we could say. So during that period of stability, the Heian period, there was a cultivation of the literary arts and very refined culture, which yielded to the ascendance of the martial arts in this next period called the Kamakura period. That the Buddhism of the earlier period, the Heian period, was largely associated with esoteric rites and devotional practices. I'm really simplifying this history, but what I want to point out is that the introduction of Zen, with its emphasis on sort of personal cultivation and discipline, had a strong appeal to this rising military class, leading to what I often refer to a little bit disparagingly as samurai Zen, some of which really didn't have a whole lot to do with what the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught nonviolence, patience, compassion, and kindness. But the samurai Zen had a certain romantic appeal to Westerners who began to learn about Zen through the writings of D.T. Suzuki and Alan Watts, who first popularized what was really a Rinzai Zen approach. And that's a stereotype that we wouldn't want to perpetuate, because there's much of there've been many wonderful teachers of Rinzai Zen, and there's much of value in that tradition. But the English translations of Dogen did not begin to appear until 1958, and then only really widely read in the 70s. So it was a little bit after the earliest introductions. So his perspective on Zen practice has tended to take a bit of a back seat to those stereotypes, those early stereotypes. I think that Dogen's radical teaching of the unity of practice, realization, and actualization, those are the words translated. So practice, awakening, and living it. That's the actualization part, how we live it. Dogen's teaching was that those are not separate and they're not linear, that the unity of practice, awakening, and actualizing is almost cyclic. And then also his emphasis on the physicality of practice, which extends to the most ordinary aspects of our life, such as cooking and cleaning and wearing and caring for your robes if you're a monk. But it could be all those things for us as lay people too. Most of us have some kind of reading that we shy away from, whether it's philosophy or poetry or religion. And Dogen has elements of each. And there can be a tendency for people to think, oh, Dogen's too hard, too difficult for me. I can't deal with Dogen. I just don't get him. And Dogen's writing is paradoxical, it's poetic, it's difficult. It can make our heads spin if we try to make sense of it in conventional, rational terms. Dogen's writing can seem impenetrable and forbidding at first, but the more you become acquainted with it, with a little help with the decoding, which we'll try and help you with, the language and the themes and the images interweave through the different passages, and they begin to penetrate in ways that are not rational, that, phrases, images take on meaning in a sort of embodied way as we actually do the practice. But ultimately, even though his writing is difficult, his message about our practice is radically simple and utterly relevant to how we live in this world. So I hope you'll come to appreciate Dogen a little bit more during this month. Stephen Heine is probably the most eminent Dogen scholar in the West, says that after 50 years of study, he says, after all this time, and with each new project dealing with different aspects of Dogen's distinctive approach, I find myself discovering and absorbing new ideas nearly every day as I read more of his writings or reread passages that I have looked at carefully on countless occasions, but probably never really understood. So when reading this from him, I felt both comforted and encouraged, because Dogen's teachings were my first entry point into Soto Zen practice. And I have been deeply moved and liberated by them for close to 40 years. Okay, so with all that preamble, let's look at the title of this fascicle, Continuous Practice. In Japanese, it's Gyoji. Gyo means action, conduct, or practice. And in the most colloquial Japanese, it's just the character for to go. Action, conduct, practice. And G means to uphold, maintain, or keep. So G often refers to keeping the precepts or ethical conduct. So that's definitely a big part of this. And we'll get to that actually on the weekend. Eventually, continuous practice as practicing the precepts, because at the end of this month or the first weekend in March, some of our Sangha members will formally receive the precepts in the Jukai ceremony. So they will take on continuous practice. It's also translated in the Kazuaki Tanahashi's translation, which is the one I'm going to give the link to, which is the most accessible translation. He translates it as continuous practice. It's also translated as sustained practice. In a new translation, which is a joint effort between Stanford University and the Soto Zen organization, which if you hear me say Soto Shu, that's them, the Soto International organization. So mostly we'll be using the Ta-Nehisi translation, but I might reference some others as well. So here is how Dogen begins. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It forms the circle of the way and is never cut off. So there's that image of the circle. The Enso, the Zen, there's a rainbow Enso out in the front hall, but often it's in black ink, brushwork, circle, which is sort of the quintessential Zen image of sometimes it's called wholeness or emptiness, enlightenment, interconnectedness, continuous practice. When we embark on this path of our ancestors, we also become the ancestors to those who will follow on this circle of the way. Dogen continues, between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, so he's adding aspiration, you know, our first impulse to begin practice, right? Aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, nirvana being that state of freedom, awakening, freedom from suffering. There's not a moment's gap. There's not a moment's gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is undivided, not forced by you or others. That's interesting. You can't force this practice on yourself or others. You can't micromanage it. We have that tendency in our culture to try and micromanage our practice. And then he says, the power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. It means your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by yourself, it is so. So you don't go around thinking, oh, my practice affects the whole earth in 10 directions. But it does. It does. We are on this path together, whether we deeply know and accept it or not. And our practice, whatever we do or say, and how we act and speak in this world, extends without limit. As Dogen says, through the entire earth and sky and the 10 directions, in ways we will never know, right? We won't know what that one small kindness to a stranger did, yet we did last week and forgot about how that extends through their life and those they touch and those they touch. There's a beautiful children's book. I can't remember the title, but it's, you know, this little boy just hugs his mom first thing in the morning, and then his mom does something for somebody else, and it just goes on and on. And it's a lovely book. I have to bring it in. I find this deeply empowering and liberating, this vision of practice. It penetrates my entrenched doubts and conditioned insecurities, which I'm sure all of us have, right? All I have ever wished for from this practice is not some blinding flash of enlightenment, but an enduring way of living an undivided life of connection in this world fraught with so much suffering, fear, and violence, and at the same time, so much love and courage and beauty. Dogen continues, accordingly, by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized and your great road opens up. By your continuous practice, the continuous practice of all Buddhas is actualized and the great road of all Buddhas opens up. Your continuous practice creates the circle of the way. By this practice, Buddha ancestors abide as Buddha, not abide as Buddha, have Buddha mind, and attain Buddha mind without cutting off. So again, he's describing this continuous practice as being not individual, but a continuous stream of practice that is reciprocal, always in relationship with all Buddhas and all beings. That last line is curious. The Sotoshu translation, the other's translation, is very literal. It says, Buddha after Buddha and ancestor after ancestor do Buddha abiding, do Buddha denying, do Buddha minding, do Buddha attaining, and are not cut off. Curious expressions. Not cutting off is just another way of saying continuous, but there's that curious way that both manifesting as Buddha and not manifesting as Buddha are included in this list. Which, to me, and I'm not a Dogen scholar, but to me, that expresses the way that we, as living, embodied human beings, have this flickering between delusion and awakening, you know? And in a sense, our very delusion is the pivot point upon which we awaken. So I think that's what this Buddha abiding, Buddha denying, or Buddha abiding, not abiding. That's us. That's just us. Flickering. Awake, not. Awake, not. And because of that, because our delusions are that pivot point of awakening, we don't have to despise our delusions. We need to recognize them with patience and kindness and utmost clarity and let them drop away. Let them go. Okay, Dogen continues. Because of this practice, there are the sun, moon, and stars. Because of this practice, there are the great earth and the open sky. Because of this practice, there are body, mind, and their environs. Because of this practice, there are the four great elements and the five skandhas. So the four great elements, earth, water, fire, and air, make us up, right? And the five skandhas in Buddhist thought are the components that make us up, form, sensation, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. We're not going to worry about exactly what those are, but the point is that they all work in total interconnection with each other, just like earth, water, fire, and air do, to make up our being, along with the sun, moon, and stars, and the great earth, all part of continuous practice, right? And then Dogen acknowledges that continuous practice is not easy, but it's always there for us as our true refuge. He says, continuous practice is not necessarily something people in the world love. That was kind of sweet. Sometimes it's hard, right? But it should be the true place of return for everyone. Because of the continuous practice of all Buddhas of the past, present, and future, all Buddhas of the past, present, and future are actualized. So, you know, when he talks like this, you know, what is he talking about? But really, he's just saying that this practice is absolutely dynamic, continually renewed in each moment and in relationship. So through space and time, absolutely dynamic. So this is just part of Dogen's introduction to continuous practice. And we won't be doing a detailed reading, as I said, of the whole thing. It's way too long. But there are some really lovely, helpful passages. Much of the text gives Dogen's, he gives these examples from the Indian and Chinese Buddhist and Zen traditions of ancestors whose practice has been inspirational to him. So he starts with the Buddha and the Buddha's first disciple, Mahakashyapa, and then he goes up to Bodhidharma, who brought Zen from India to Japan. And many of these stories, if you read the whole thing, will be familiar to some of you. But and we won't go into them all, because some of them we've talked about before. But because they offer models of monastic practice, a lot of them aren't really that helpful for us as lay practitioners with family and relationships to contend with, rent or mortgages to pay, groceries to buy. So it's not that helpful for us to hear about some monk who sat propped up without lying down for 5 years doing zazen without ever sleeping. And that just discourages us, right? So we can take these stories for as inspirational in the context that Dogen offers them and what they meant to him. But we have to, I think, look at continuous practice, as I said, through some different lenses that are relevant to the lives we are living here at this time and in this way. So we might look at relationships or everyday activities or illness, the great matter of life and death, or the precepts, ethical conduct, all through this perspective of continuous practice. And we will encourage you to find out what continuous practice means to you in your own daily life and practice, when you're here in the Zendo and when you're out in your everyday life in the world. We here in the 21st century are living in another time of great fear and uncertainty, of warfare and disaster on a scale that Dogen could not have imagined 800 years ago. And we cannot possibly imagine what life on Earth will be 800 years from now, can we? We really don't know. But if human beings are still here, we can hope that our continuous practice now will be of some benefit and extend that far, as Dogen says it will. So I'm going to close, or almost close, with Dogen's famous poem of the changing seasons. Spring, cherry blossoms. Summer, the cuckoo's call. Autumn, full moon. Winter, snow, cold and still. Mind, clear and calm. So at first, this appears a little bit like a listing of Japanese seasonal cliches. You know, those are all, you know, cherry blossoms, of course. But Dogen's title for this poem is Original Face. Original face refers to our deepest true nature, you know, beyond the conditioned specifics of our karmic lives. So I think that kind of gives the deeper meaning away, that within the changing seasons of our lives, the clear mind witnesses arising and passing phenomena, the cherry blossoms, the cuckoo's call, the winter storms. And the mind is clear and calm. So I think this is Dogen's poetic expression of this, of the circle of the way through the cycle of the seasons. So as we embark on this path of continuous practice this month, I would like to practice what I preach. So I began 2 days ago by marking midwinter. Did you know that we just passed midwinter, the point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox? And in Celtic tradition, it's called Imbolc, and it's the feast of St. Brigid, who's the patron saint of Ireland and of poetry. So what I did was, from dusk on February 1st to dusk on February 2nd, I pause now and then through my day to track my day in a continuous poem. It was my poem of continuous practice. Michael was away, still is, on Bowen Island for his solo retreat, returning tomorrow. So I tried my best to set down the Zen to-do list, and I was almost successful. But even my lapses were included in my continuous practice poem. And it was a wonderful way. It was a wonderful way to just stay present and awake to my inner and outer experience through the day. It's not easy to take a whole day. It wasn't easy. And it felt like a privilege to be able to do so. But I hope you can find ways to bring that sense of continuous practice and vivid presence into your daily life. It might be by choosing a particular activity that you bring that quality of attention to, or a particular time span during the day. Knowing that the ancestors are with you and you are with the ones who will come after. Here's my poem. I'm not going to read it because it's 3 pages long, but maybe I'll just read the beginning and the end. Can I read you the beginning? Oh, we don't have time. Okay, now that I said it, I have to. Okay, Imbolc begins 5:30 p.m. February 1st. Sky still a pale blue-gray, shading darker above. Tall cedar and hemlock silhouetted out my south window. Starting a half hour late to mark this midwinter turning, just to finish 2 little tasks on the to-do list. Can all the others wait? And the end is almost dusk. Blue sky to the south, clouds rosy tinged, reassuring cedar and hemlock silhouettes. This Imbolc day song draws to a close. My mom always said I was a child of the dusk, going out when the light faded, not wanting to come in. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Please continue your practice.